Welcome to another episode of the Property Report podcast by Property Guru for 2023. This year, we have explored the latest trends surrounding the real estate industry across different markets in Asia. Today, we will be viewing into the smart cities of the future as we discuss how technology is transforming urban development in Asia. And joining us for this episode are our highly respected judges of the Property Guru Asia Property Award Series. Let's start off with the founder, managing partner, creative director, Indonesia and Singapore, Genius Lochi, and member, Indonesia judging panel, Mr. Alex Bayu Saputro. Next, we have the senior regional director of Asia Pacific, Yardi Systems Inc., member, Hong Kong judging panel, Mr. Bernie Devine. Hello,
hi,
gentlemen.
Guys.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being with us today. First, we need to clarify, what is the concept of a smart city and how does it differ from traditional urban development?
Okay, I believe that, the city was developed, the urban development was by naturally, it was organic. It was by supply and demand. When you need a town, then suddenly they build a town. You need commercial, they build a commercial. You need food, they build a restaurant. So it's just moved by organic. But the smart city actually was planned. Actually, you already, it's a new city. They actually plan the grid, they plan the infrastructure, they plan the transportation and security, all that was the one.
That's interesting, Alex. I mean, I've had some interesting aligned and also alternative experiences with smart cities. I spent most of 2006 to 2010 in the Middle East working with a bunch of developers, and in particular, Nakheel, the developers of the Palm. And with a remit to, as you say, you know, from the dirt up, from the very basics, there's a pile of dirt out there, go and turn it into a smart city. And work with everything, all the infrastructure, and connect everything together and execute a city that operates differently. And then on the other hand, more recently, spent time in Asia working with clients who've wanted to basically introduce smart city technology into existing cities. And I think there, you know, different challenges. And, I think it's a bit of a long answer, but I think there are different ways of approaching what a smart city is. And for me, ever since the beginning of my involvement in smart cities, one of my things has been, when do you know is a city smart? And for me, it's something really simple. For example, like, when does someone in the procurement department of local government specify that the traffic signals have to be internet enabled? That to me is a really interesting sign that the internet is connected to everything in the city, and therefore you have the opportunity from the connectivity point of view to get to be smart. Whether you actually achieve that depends on a whole lot of other factors, including software and primarily also user adoption. Because one of the things that we saw in those early smart city endeavors in the Middle East was in fact a hesitancy from consumers to go that next step. Because one of the key things I think that people we learned was that when you have a city that offers benefits from the cloud to the occupants, to enable them to access those benefits, the consumers need to give up some level of privacy as to who they are, where they are, those sorts of things. And definitely some hesitancy amongst people to do that sort of thing. But I think I'm seeing that change. You know, it's a trade-off. A little bit of privacy, a little bit of benefit, it seems to work better.
Thank you, Bernie. Alex, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think what he says is correct. I mean, we need to make a trade-off. The smart city actually give us convenience, and it answer a lot of this, our human limitation. I mean, we are limited to our own thing, and it will take out a lot of this redundant work that actually is not necessary. The trade-off actually give us the freedom. I mean, freedom to enjoy our life. I mean, freedom for you to bike around without sitting down working constantly, spending time family. So I would say it's a trade-off, yes. Definitely. It's just how we manage it. I think that's what the word is.
Yes. Yes, I would agree. It is how you manage it. And I think the other thing that's worth mentioning in that is that back in 2006, when I was working on some smart city initiatives, the concept of AI was very far in the future, whereas today it's here and now. And therefore, the ability to achieve a much more seamless handoff between different tools that enable that convenience and that accessibility has improved enormously. And also, I think, made it more palatable for consumers to look at, you know, giving up some privacy in order to get some benefit. So I think, you know, one of the things we saw early on was a real struggle with that seamless connection across multiple apps that give the user a relatively seamless experience. You know, big links in one app that take you to another seamlessly and deliver a continuous sort of process on the solution that you're seeking. And then AI, I think, adds another layer to the capability around that. So lots of things happening now that are really benefiting the, you know, the initiatives for smarter cities.
For our second question, how is technology being utilized to transform urban development in Asia and create smarter cities?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting topic because there's so much going on. And if you look across, you know, Asia, you say, well, you've got everything from the development of a new capital city for Indonesia all the way through to, in China, a whole range of cities that are trying to evolve into being something smarter and deliver more convenience and more amenity for the occupants of the city. So there's an enormous amount of diversity. I think there's a couple of key trends, though, that are worth focusing on. One is on the sort of the infrastructure side and on the traffic side. A really interesting initiative that we're seeing is the development of satellite technology to monitor traffic and to monitor public transport and to deliver more accurate updates on public transport generally, or specifically and on transport generally. I think that's a really interesting initiative that is achieving a whole bunch of things: improved convenience and amenity, also reducing congestion and therefore improving, you know, sort of the energy consumption and pollution from public transport, etc. So a whole range of initiatives in that space that are really working quite well. Two is, I think, community developers are focusing more on bringing, as Alex said before, bringing infrastructure in early that supports that view of making cities smarter and enabling more technology. As we move to, you know, we've got 5G, as we move to even to 6G and greater density of signal, the ability to deliver more data faster and to gather more data faster and with AI work with that data more effectively, I think we're really doing a lot of things that are helping. And then on the micro level, I think the interesting thing is seeing where smart homes are starting to connect with their communities and deliver improved amenity across a local community for the occupants of those homes. So yeah, there's, like I said, there's a whole range of different initiatives that are really pretty interesting. Key to them all, I would say, is having the right infrastructure in place, getting hold of the data, and then having the tool set and the capability to process that and deliver meaningful results, putting that data into context.
Yeah, I would say that Asia, especially Indonesia, I mean, so far Asia, the one that the smart city that we recognize will be mostly Singapore, I think, Southeast Asia. I mean, Indonesia definitely would need to implement more, especially we have this traffic congestion issue. And pollution is another one. How the smart city can control this pollution of the vehicle and how much traffic enters a certain zone of the city. I mean, they use a manual way, which I think will be more beneficial with using this AI to help on that, right? As being a designer here, I mean, the energy consumption that all the cities been using is tremendous. It's actually create quite a huge global warming. So if you have the smart city, you'll be able to identify which sector the heat load will come into a certain part of building, then you automatically will create a shade or screen or double screen on the architecture to kind of seal that to limit the heat factor. That will actually reduce a lot. Imagine one office tower, you just have that kinetic building just can move toward the sensor with the climate. That will kind of create, one is interesting on the architecture. Secondly, is actually will kind of limit this heat load that's been generating a lot lately from our side, right? Especially Asia is a hot climate. We use air condition pretty much almost every day. You know, the amount of heat load is being generating is huge, right? This smart city will help a lot. Water cooling system, all that will kind of help in the air conditioning system.
If there's nothing else you want to add, I want to move on to the third question, gentlemen. Are there any concerns regarding data privacy and security in smart cities, and how are they being addressed?
Yeah, I'd say that's a really pertinent question. I think there's some really important things being figured out right now. What we've seen over the last two or three years has been a massive growth in cyber breaches. There was a study done earlier this year by one of the major consulting firms in Australia where they tested IP addresses to find BMS systems that were not secure. And just in Australia, they found over 5,500 BMS systems that were not secure. Now, they could have been any type of building or any type of infrastructure that had a BMS that was not secure, but 5,500 of them, where it was basically easy for a hacker to get in there and breach the system, either get data or take control of the system, do all those sorts of things. So lots of challenges. I think that, you know, what we're misunderstanding at the moment is the benefits of moving to Web3 and private wallets and those sorts of things that deliver a capability where basically users have control over their own private data. And what they leave as a footprint is merely a token that said they provided the private data they need to provide, but they don't leave the data behind. Moving to that model really does change the game in terms of who has with sensitive data and for what reason. I think there's still a whole bunch of issues around IoT to be resolved in terms of cybersecurity. But I think with Web3 and that whole wallet model with tokenization brings a much more secure personal identity management tool that people are not really understanding yet, but I think eventually we'll get there, and that's the way we do it.
I would say there's a trade-off. I mean, the convenience we're getting from this smart city will kind of bringing the criminal part, the hacker, the data sharing, all that. I personally feel, there's a lot of prevention they try to do. But one more important is the idea, if we can, how the data will start collecting. I mean, for example, one example is Apple. I mean, data privacy is one thing that's been blocked. We cannot keep the data. There was no storage. It was only being used for the purpose of that individual or in the purpose of a legitimate measure on that. That's how I see it. I mean, although, as what Bernice said, there's a lot of challenging. We're going to get a lot more of this issue in the future. Right, but the trade-off that we will have to solve the way we live. Because the thing is, smart city is actually, why is the word called city? It's because city has been congested with people. Everybody comes to city for work, for trading, for politics, for everything. So the city is getting too heavy to accommodate the human. And that's what caused the traffic, like Jakarta is one of them. I mean, Bangkok, all this. We are having all this congested problem. Right. Yet we also see at the same time in Singapore, I mean, the the island is tiny, right? But how the traffic's been managed and the public transportation is very important to bring in people to use the convenient traffic transport that will kind of lighten up the load of the car entering to the certain zone of the city, right? So yeah, it's a trade-off. It's a big challenging. We're still going to face it. But it's just the method and how the idea was being intended to do on data collection. I think that's more important on that.
Now, how do smart city initiatives impact economic growth and attract investments in your region?
Okay, I use an example that, as I mentioned, the cities was planned. But smart cities planned. Right, there's one incident. You know, I live in Singapore for quite a while. In year 2000, right, the government planned to do a biotech industry, make it into a Singapore as a hub on that. And then what they do, they create a zone, right? They take a part of a Tuas area, and then they actually let it a foreign investor coming in, you know, a pharmaceutical, biotechnology, all that, a big company all coming in. They start investing in that plot of land. And what it does, at the same time, they actually post the education on that, the biotech education. There was a field coming up. Instead of medical, it's biotech medical. So it actually created this multiple investment coming in, because there was a talent provided at the same time. And this was done year 2000. You're talking about 20 years ago was being planned. So smart city, yes, it was a planned city. I call it, it was planned if a country want to allocate a certain zone for a certain thing. In China, you can see that certain area is industrial area, certain areas IT, or, you know, Silicon Valley is about IT. These are how the investor coming in, and obviously investor only coming in when there's a security, there's safety, there's convenient. Just by providing a Wi-Fi in any public space, that's already help already. Just as simple as that, right?
Yeah, and Alex, I think that's I think you're right. I think, you know, that amenity, that convenience, and the sort of ubiquitous nature of connectivity is important. And now, I guess boil the cogs of industry, right? Make things less risk, give things less friction, so they move more smoothly. I think one of the things that we saw over the years as we did a range of different studies, particularly was in the Middle East and also more recently, a lot of it has been around, you know, what are the, yeah, like the question says, where's the ROI? And for me, I think the important thing is you've got to take a very broad view on the ROI when it comes to smart cities, because it is factors that in some respects are hard to measure. Once you get beyond an individual building into a community and into a whole city, that convenience factor, which takes minutes off public transport journeys, moves more people into public transport journeys, and at the same time, you know, it eases pollution, does all those sorts of things, reduces energy consumption. All of those factors really come together, and there's a point at which, you know, there's a public benefit there, and that's something that the government has got to take, you know, take the opportunity to seize. But there's also a private benefit. I mean, I think part of it is then as you deliver that smarter city with that better environment, more accessibility, greater benefits and amenity, you create the opportunity for businesses to leverage off that and to leverage an improved operating platform. So I think there's, you know, there are many layers to what are the benefits of smart cities. And from everything I've seen, I'd say the business case steps up. I think there's a lot of detail that people need to understand to make sure that they understand the benefits that are there. And I think there's no question as we look at, you know, the differential pricing in buildings these days, those that have got ESG ratings, you know, that are compliant with low or zero carbon footprints, etc., they're achieving greater ROI, greater cap rates, or improved cap rates, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I think there's definite data to support a view that, you know, smarter is more ROI.
Alex, Bernie, we appreciate you both for your time. Thanks for tuning into another episode of the Property Report podcast by Property Guru. The next batch of this series, we will be joined by industry experts from this year's Property Guru Asia Real Estate Summit. So stay tuned. For more information, visit AsiaPropertyAwards.com. We'll see you then.